Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, a show for marketers by marketers to talk shop and share insights on the ever-changing landscape of the digital world. My name is Katya, and I am your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. Now, in every episode, we aim to help marketers maximize their potential by getting real with industry experts across multiple industries and disciplines. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy, we talk through it all and leave you with actionable tips to help you in the day-to-day of marketing. Now, today's episode, I had my guest, Katie Stoller, who is the head of influencer marketing at Fiat Growth, a strategic marketing shop focused on data-backed decision-making, innovation, iteration, and execution. Now, with over a decade of experience at global PR agencies, Katie counsels clients on how to effectively reach goals by working with brand-right influencers to tell compelling and engaging stories. Throughout her career, she's worked with brands across many different industries, including retail, food, finance, and technology. So put your AirPods in, turn up that volume, and get ready for our guest today, Katie Stoller. Katie, welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast. I am so excited to be talking to you about PR and why it's not dead and how it plays into influencer marketing and all that good stuff.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Excellent. So let's get the ball rolling. I'd love it if you could share a little bit about you and your expertise as it pertains to just kind of PR and what you do now.
Yeah. So I started in the traditional kind of PR route. I worked at Ogilvy and then I was at Ketchum for a couple of years. And most recently I was with Golin. So I've always worked at really large PR agencies on both the corporate practice, so doing more B2B, tech, finance, communications, and then most of my career was in the brand marketing space. So working with retail clients, lots of food, lots of different industries. And now I'm with a company called Fiat Growth, and we're a growth agency. So we do everything related to growth. With affiliate marketing, strategic partnerships, we advise executives on how to kind of like start their go-to-market strategy for startups and then just to kind of continue growing. So we work with a lot of apps, a lot of websites and services, and I lead the influencer team using influencers to help kind of, you know, with awareness, but also to grow these platforms.
Very nice. Now, I'm really excited that you started at Ogilvy because I am actually a PR major. So Ogilvy has always been in that periphery, right? So that is old school, I feel like, if I can even call it old school, but old school PR. And then where you're at now, I think that you've, you know, in your career, you've been seated at this really great place to be able to see the evolution of what PR looks like. I'd love to hear from you, like, what was PR and what is it now as you see it?
Yeah, no, I'm like, I always was like anti-agency when I was in grad school and like kind of starting my career. I was like, I don't want to work at one of those big agencies. I just had this like negative connotation about it. All of my friends kind of after grad school, I went to grad school for public relations and advertising at DePaul in Chicago. It's a very like well-known program. You know, everyone that goes that does that program kind of goes into the agency world. So I was kind of like, I'm just going to go somewhere small. Like I didn't see myself in this big agency world, but yeah. I'm so glad that I went that route because there's nothing like working at an agency. It's just, it's such a like boot camp in everything communications related. Yes. And Ogilvy was awesome because they're huge in advertising. They're, you know, one of the like founding advertising agencies. So just the learning curve there was just amazing. There's nothing that could have replaced that. But my experience is kind of unique because now I'm an influencer specialist. I focus really only on influencer marketing. But the journey to get there was kind of interesting and kind of unique. I started in LA after my undergrad in like the mid 2010s, like 2010, 2011. Right when social media was kind of starting and really kicking off, and I was doing traditional PR for a fashion boutique agency. So our job was to like call fashion editors at all the magazines and radio stations. Like there were still some people that accepted pitches by fax. I know that's like absurd.
A fax number.
But
what is that?
I know, but like, but. It was very much like traditional PR. When we'd get press clippings from magazines, we'd actually like cut them out of a magazine and paste them into a press book, which like is absolutely not something that happens anymore. But that was kind of how it started. And as social media was becoming bigger and the paparazzi was becoming, not becoming, but was a huge thing in LA with fashion and celebrities.
Yeah.
I sort of like had this moment of like, wow, like we were gifting all this free stuff to not influencers, to celebrities at the time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it at the time, but now looking back in hindsight, like that was influencer marketing. That was really the foundation mm-hmm. of it. We were putting product in the hands of influential people with huge audiences. They were audiences from TV, movies. A lot of reality shows were just kicking off. It was like the era of Laguna Beach and The Hills. But it really was what like today gifting to influencers is. So I took kind of that learning throughout my traditional PR career, and it sort of just evolved into what now my career is all working with influencers.
Which I think is wild. And you hit the nail on the head as well too. Like celebrity endorsements is a type of influencer marketing for sure. And I think the biggest change, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, but in my eyes, the biggest change has been, you know, we used to tune into TV, right? We used to tune into TV and those commercials and radio, and now we tune into people. And the people portion is that social media portion, but I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that. I mean, what is the impact of social media on PR now?
Yeah, no, I think it's so fascinating. And it goes beyond, you know, traditional PR in a sense to like mm-hmm. all of communications. I mean, the biggest thing I think with why influencer marketing like took off and just exponentially is growing every single year and big brands are buying into it. Like it's no longer this like elusive kind of thing that some brands are doing. It's everyone's doing it. And I think yeah. the reason is because when you think about traditional advertising, where you know, have a media agency that's buying specific media spots and it's all very like, you know, calculated. There's all these like algorithms. It's very complicated. And it's intrusive. Like you're watching TV and, you know, a commercial pops on and interrupts your show. Influencer marketing is like the antithesis of that. It's we choose to watch it. We choose, and we're okay yeah. with commercials. I feel like consumers at this point, you know, I think for a while we were a little concerned, like, are people going to tap through Instagram stories and be okay with these interruptions? Are people going to go back to influencers' channels who are doing SponCon, who are using hashtag ad? And mm-hmm. I think there was a period where like there was a little bit of nerves from marketers of like, is this going to be accepted by consumers? Yeah. But now we're seeing that it is. I mean, and as you know, you and I can talk about as being consumers of social media, do you just turn off Instagram when you see an ad? Like, do you throw your hands up and say, this is ridiculous? Like, no, we're just kind of used to it.
Absolutely.
And I think it's just become sort of the new way, you know, to do traditional advertising too.
Yeah. And it's funny when you were saying that, what really pops in my head is we stream everything. So we don't even have a cable, right? But we stream, and even the commercial less, you know, subscription that I have still has like the little pockets of ads. And I find that when the ads go on, I go to my social media feed. I'm like, right. Okay, well, that's not entertaining. So it's ironic that like, if I'm not going to get hit on the TV, I am going to get hit on Instagram. But I think that you're right. Like we are a lot more accepting of, what happens on social media. Now, as it pertains to, you know, people, you know, posting sponsored content and all of that mm-hmm. good stuff. And I don't know if it's because it has become so prolific that there's no feed. There's no one without a feed that has some sort of influencer posting.
Right. Right. I'd be very weird if, I mean, I guess like maybe in, not to like stereotype ages, but I think, you know, the old school kind of like the way like my mom who's almost 70, the way she uses Facebook is like very different than the way I use Facebook.
Agree.
So she probably doesn't see very many ads. Like, you know, some stuff might filter in through the algorithm to her feed, but for the most part, she's got like 7 friends on Facebook. So there's not a lot of like content being shared, and she uses it literally as like a way to stay in touch with friends. But absolutely. I think out of that, you know, very small percentage of the pie, I think all of us are just consumed. And I don't even know, as a marketer and someone that's so deep into it, I can spot an ad from a mile away because I literally yeah. do ad deals all day long. But I don't even know if, you know, the general public is even realizing sometimes when they're seeing ad content, you know, influencers are very sneaky with where they hide the hashtag ad sometimes. So, I mean, sometimes it just kind of flows really nicely into the other content. It's very obvious.
I feel like that's ultimately what you're always looking for as a marketer if you're engaging with any influencer, something that is seamless and just kind of flows into it.
Right.
Now, what other effects do you think social media has had on traditional PR? Like, how has that shifted? Is it more accessible to kind of everybody, so there are fewer people going to agencies, or am I completely off base? Which I'm totally open to that.
No, I think PR is interesting. Like, PR is kind of the umbrella that like social media sits under. I mean, that's how I kind of like traditionally have thought of it. I think now that social media is just like so pervasive in the world, it's kind of weird to think of it as like a little, you know, raindrop underneath another umbrella. But really, like, PR encompasses anything that's storytelling about your brand. So, you know, it's your website, it's your branding, it's your thought leadership, or, you know, what's your CEO putting on LinkedIn. It's press release, the old traditional press releases going out on the wire. It's, you know, obviously the old, you know, the main thing in PR is media relations. So working with reporters to tell your story. So PR is a lot of things, and social media is like kind of one, you know, pillar underneath that. And PR isn't like going away. I think for a while, and still, you know, people were, marketers and traditional PR practitioners were a little bit nervous because social media was just like coming in hot, you know, that it was taking up some of the mind share and some of the space. But that's not to say that like brands aren't still investing a ton of money into media relations, building relationships with reporters, and doing a ton in PR. I mean, I during the pandemic, like, we were busier than ever at the agency. Like, brands, you know, we're taking a lot of time to tell really thoughtful, cohesive stories and, you know, continue getting their messaging out there. But social media is just where the eyeballs are. So I think just a lot of the dollars and a lot of the energy and time spent that used to maybe be more on the traditional media side is just now spent on social media.
What would be a kind of top tier publication for brands to be, you know, featured in from like a media relations perspective? I mean, are there some top ones? Is it Forbes? Like, do brands still want to go after that? Or has it become so niche because there are so many more websites and there's so much more social media and it's more about the social channels or the social channels from, you know, specific brands, right? Does that question make sense?
No, it's like a loaded question. It's a good question, but it's a loaded question. Because it's funny, because it's like, it used to be like, there were X amount of reporters at New York Times. And there was a tech, you know, editor. And there was a, you know, entertainment, like, review editor, whatever. And those were the people you wanted to get on your radar. But now it's like, there's bylines. There's always been bylines. But there's so many, like, opinion people. I mean, anyone can really apply to be a contributor to a lot of these really big top tier publications.
Yeah.
And these aren't necessarily like trained reporters. They're just experts that, you know, the publication wants their POV on things. So there's that. I mean, and then there's kind of the whole thing of like, is a tweet from a reporter considered coverage? Like, we used to include social media from the New York Times reporter in our like coverage reports. And we'd include like their follower count or however many impressions that tweet got in our like number of impressions that we would share at the end of the month. So, but every brand does it different. And there's really no, it's so niche specific. Like, my clients being in TechCrunch, being in, you know, GigaOm, that even still exists. I probably just dated myself. I don't, but like those type of.
DigiDay.
DigiDay, I think, is actually still, some of them are like totally gone.
Yeah.
ZDNet, you know, like the old school kind of like tech trades that are putting out tons of tech related stories every day. You know, that's better for some of my clients than being featured in New York Times. Like, it kind of just depends. And then the trade media is still very, very, you know, up and going. Like, in the fashion space, there's the Business of Fashion, there's Women's Wear Daily, you know, there's still a lot of those niche outlets that different brands would definitely benefit from. I think it's just the everyday consumer is on social media. So having my opinion on kind of, you know, where to start is like, make sure your own house is in order, like your own social channels are putting out, you know, messaging that's consistent with what your brand stands for, putting out good messaging consistently, and then kind of using PR as another way to kind of amplify the message.
I love the idea of PR amplifying what you're already doing and leaning really into the storytelling aspect of a brand. I think it's so incredibly important. And also influencers do a really great job at being storytellers of a brand in their own voice as well too. So that authenticity is incredibly important. But one of the things that you had mentioned was impressions. And the question I have to you, because I think it matches, I think PR is the same as influencer marketing in this regard, is trying to find like the return on investment or prove the return on investment of, you know, spending your time on telling your brand story, right? Through PR or engaging with an influencer to be able to share your brand story. So how have you shown a return on investment on both of those strategies, PR and influencer marketing? Is it impressions? Is it revenue? What do you typically use?
It's like the age old question in PR, yeah. And it's like continued now through to influencer marketing. I get like the chills talking about like anything like metrics wise, because it's just really complicated because there's so many different ways to measure it. And some of what you're measuring isn't measurable. And I try and, you know, educate my clients on that too. It's like awareness. There are things that can be measured. Like, let's get that out there. You know, it's not like this totally crazy thing that is just, you just get what you get. You can measure certain things, and I can go into depth on kind of how we do it at Fiat, but you can't always measure awareness into perpetuity, because the thing is like, if the post is going to live on someone's feed and someone in 3 years finds the feed and loves this person and is scrolling down and sees it, like you're never going to know that. So some of it, and so some of it, when we pay our influencers, you know, if I'm paying an influencer $10,000, my clients are like, we want to make sure we're going to make $10,000 off of this. Yeah. I have to, you know, do that education that like, we can't know for sure exactly where this message is going to go and how the person that receives the message is going to use it. We just don't know.
Yeah.
That. We can't like put little like, you know, web crawlers in their brains and then track them for 6 years. Like, it's just impossible. But what we can do is we can track promo codes, UTM links, you know, bit.lys, custom links, and see kind of how that message moves in through the sales funnel from awareness down to purchase. And that's what we kind of specialize in at Fiat, is we're really good at finding influencers who convert. This is the new like era of influencer, in my opinion. It's working with influencers that are good at conversion beyond just storytelling, beyond just awareness, but like getting their followers to do something. Mm-hmm. And then we can track those conversions for X amount of time. And that is not to say that there's not going to be like spillover. We call it kind of like an organic spillover into people that we don't see convert, because maybe they saw it at their mom's house and then, you know, they were on a different cell phone 6 months later and bought it. Like, we're never going to know that.
Yeah.
But we can assume that there's going to be some additional spillover kind of. But that's what our clients want to see. They want to see great storytelling that translates into actual sales, download apps, or downloads, installs, that type of thing. They want to see the action. And I really truly think that that's where the industry is going to shift in 2022. I think brands for a long time have just been paying these kind of like enormous sums of money to influencers, and rightfully so. I mean, being an influencer is a full-time job for many people, and some of the content is amazing and, you know, they should be compensated, but there wasn't this expectation of like, what do I get for this? It was just kind of awareness. It was content for their feed, content for ads. And now we're kind of like, well, what else? Like, we want to see what this is going to physically do in numbers.
There's so much to unpack with that.
Yeah, that was a loaded answer.
I have so many things I should have taken notes. Okay. So you've talked about how you can kind of show like that value and the impact of influencer marketing. What did the return on investment look like when you were at Ogilvy and you guys were, you know, trying to prove, all right, this PR initiative is working or this PR campaign is working. In comparison to what it's now, did you measure impressions in the past before when it came to PR? Was it how many, you know, how many times you were mentioned in the media? Was that a valuable metric when you used to, I don't know, I don't want to say when you used to do, but you know what I mean? Like, in the traditional PR world, how would you measure it then?
Yeah. So I think it's, I mean, as what I know of my knowledge of how PR agencies and, you know, PR programs are still run, they still measure an impression. So impressions are like the amount of eyeballs. So if someone sees it twice, that counts as two impressions that hit a website, that hit, you know, an email blast. It's all the eyeballs that saw that message.
Yeah.
Whether it's more than once, whatever. That's why impressions are usually higher than reach, because reach is actually the physical person that saw it. So for PR, we still measure on impressions. We still want to get an idea of how many people like saw it, but that number is tough because we're getting unique monthly visitor numbers from websites that aren't always super accurate. We're getting social media impressions, which are different than followers, because I'm sure many people know this, but just because you post on social media does not mean all 36 of your followers are going to see it. If you have 36 followers, probably 7 or 8 will see it on their feed, because there's a much smaller percentage of people that actually see things due to how the algorithm spits out content. So it's a number of impressions, it's a share of voice versus, you know, competitors. Are they getting the share of voice in the tech space? If it's a car manufacturer, you know, what's Toyota getting versus what's, you know, Mercedes getting? And then it's, you know, it's a little tricky with social media, because social media impressions are different from traditional media impressions, because social media impressions you only can see if you have access to that person's account. So if you're not doing a paid partnership with them, we don't know necessarily how many actual views that post got. So sometimes we'll do like a blended impression number. And different brands have different ways of kind of, you know, different brands have put together different calculations of kind of like what success means. I've seen clients do like a 1 through 10 scale. They like make it really simple. Like, is this a 1? Is this a 5? Is this a 10? I think we're still trying to see how many. I think the biggest like metric is just how many people saw it.
Yeah. And that I feel like makes sense. And I'm so glad that you articulated all of that, as well as like, articulating that difference between impressions and reach, because I think that some people are still very confused with that. I always go back to like the billboards, the idea of billboards, right? Like if you're on whatever freeway you live around, let's say it's 150, that's an arbitrary number, right? And you've got like that billboard, I could tell you how many cars pass by that. Those are the impressions. And it's crazy to think that there was a time where it was all about billboards, right? It was all about billboards, commercials, radio ads, and all you could really get are the impressions of how many potential people could see it. So I think that we've come a long way from traditional PR to including social media, and then kind of blending them together. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on, what do you think some of the PR benefits, what kind of benefits of PR do we see in influencer marketing? Does it pertain to the storytelling? Is it the messaging portion? Like, what are the PR benefits for influencer marketing campaigns?
Yeah, no, I love this question. I'm obsessed with storytelling. Like, I don't know if it's my roots from Ogilvy and just, you know, everything at Ogilvy is creative. I mean, they're like so obsessed with creativity and storytelling. But I have clients that are like, you know, we just kind of want to get these promo codes out, and we just want people to, you know, hear about us and sign up. And I really like to take a step back and be like, well, let's get the messaging in order. Like, because I truly believe that if you're telling one cohesive message, and not just one message, but one story, you know, it can have multiple pieces to that on your own social media channels, through your influencers, when you're talking to media, when you're doing blog posts on your own website, like there's so many different communication channels. And if you're telling a cohesive message, I think that message is going to go so much further than like, you know, your Twitter feeds posting random shares of other content, your Instagram's pictures of like the lunchroom at your office. Like, that baffles my mind that some brands just like, you can tell they have no strategy. So I still think that like traditional storytelling brand building is so important. And the brands that do it well, we know. It's like, we know everything McDonald's stands for. You know, we understand their commercials match their social media. We know, you know, I used to work on the IKEA business. I loved that account. Like, they stand for, they have a, you know, certain values that they kind of like weave throughout all of their messaging. It's an affordable way to make your house a home and make it beautiful and feel good about your home. Like, those like basic like essential storytelling components, I think are so important. And they'll make your social media feed so much better.
Yeah.
Too. I totally forgot where I was going with that.
No, it's okay. I love all of those things that you were saying. I think the original question was really, what are the PR benefits for an influencer marketing campaign? It sounds like it is the storytelling, but it almost hinges on what you had said earlier on, getting your house in order, which I love that terminology, right? And it sounds like getting your house in order is really getting your messaging in line, like what it is that you stand for and all of that good stuff. What else do you think we need to include in order to truly amplify what we're doing with influencer marketing from the PR sense?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was going to go into this too. So another thing that we did a lot at the PR agency is work with people that are mediable. So it doesn't have to be, I mean, celebrities are great just because the name recognition. I mean, they don't even have to like do that great of content. It's just the name recognition alone kind of gets you really far. But I've worked with like food bloggers that are like they're a household name to me just because I, you know, have this like insane Rolodex of influencers in my head. But to the average person, they might not, you know, they might have like seen them or whatever, but they're not, it's not the same as saying like, you know, Jennifer Aniston, where everyone knows who that is. But some of them are mediable. Like Food Network would really want to work with like, what's Gabby cooking? Like she has like 400,000 or 500,000 Instagram followers. So she's not like famous in the sense of everyone knows her, but she's a really popular Instagram feed. She's really innovative with her recipes. Food Network would love to do an interview with her. So there is that blending there of working with influencers that can also convert into eyeballs on the media side. So I think that's kind of another like interesting place with conversion. And we build that into contracts sometimes. We'll say like, you know, we're going to pitch you to 10 publications. You can okay which publications we're going to pitch you to. And, you know, there's a chance that we might not, nothing might stick. But if it does, are you, you know, you have to do a 2-hour interview with X publication. It's big with events. Like before COVID, I did a really big event with for a Disney movie with the American Egg Board. And we worked with Juliana Rancic. We did a whole like charity component. And it was great because we got her social media reach.
Yeah.
We got her son to like, you know, talk about the movie. It was a perfect fit because she has a little boy that would love to see this movie. The charity component made sense. You know, her and her husband are very big donors to this hospital. And we got media from her because just pitching her to entertainment media was huge. So that's a wonderful example of like a 360 program in a PR setting that incorporates influencer in a really like smooth way.
That's a great example. I love that. Okay, so I'm gonna take a turn to the left here because the other day I was interviewing somebody else and we were talking about how nowadays with so much social media, and then the blend of PR and, you know, I feel like it's a constant conversation. But one of the things that came up was, you know, the trolls on social media, right? And the big question was like, have influencer marketing managers taken over like the PR crisis management based on like just kind of trolls, or is everybody kind of dividing and conquering? Like it seems that something that was traditionally under like this PR umbrella, which is like that crisis management, oh, they're speaking about my brand in this way, is also now on those who are managing influencers as well too. So I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think everyone does it a little different from a big PR agency, which is, you know, what my experience has been. The big companies, you know, the McDonald's, the Walmarts, the, you know, SC Johnsons of the world, typically like traditional crisis management where like if something happened, you know, somebody got hurt from a product or something, that's definitely falling into the PR wheelhouse. There's amazing crisis communications specialists that know how to like address media. A lot of big companies have thick, like I'm talking binders this thick of crisis plans of how to respond to anything in the media. Press conference, protocols, all of that. Social media is typically handled by the social media team. And there's like social listening experts that their job is just to kind of scrape comments, respond to things. It could be more of a customer service role where they're kind of answering questions about products. And then if something does flag up, there's usually a protocol of like, you go to the team attorney, the attorney approves the content. There's you know, it's actually very complicated a lot of times. In my experience, someone like me that does like brand deals typically isn't responsible for that. I always include in my contracts, and I usually ask this of the influencers, if they get a DM that is like disparaging towards the product or something happened that we can't see in the comment section, I require them to send a screenshot. That's actually a mandate. I think it's an FTC rule when it comes to medical devices and anything within pharmaceuticals. I worked on a pharmaceutical company a couple years ago, and any adverse reactions needed to be reported. It's just a rule. So if someone we could obviously see it in the comments and it would get flagged, but if they got DMs, no one would see it except for the influencer. So they would send those to us, like, you know, this, you know, lotion gave me a rash or whatever. And then we would report those back to the client and they would have to do something to like rectify that. But traditionally, in my experience, it falls more on the social media team. So again, under that like PR umbrella, there's usually a whole social structure of who's responding to comments, who's flagging, you know, how posts are performing, who's responding to comments. And they're usually the ones that would be like that first line of defense.
Yeah.
And they usually have canned responses for things that aren't like crazy important. But that's also what goes back to the messaging, having that solid messaging down, you know, being able to respond to things in a way that ladders back up to the company's like brand values, you know, goes back to my whole obsession with how messaging is so important.
Hey, listen, I think that that obsession is needed in your line of work, but also nowadays as well too, with just, you know, with influencer marketing being what it is. And I mean, it's a business of people. We are marketers. Mm-hmm. People marketing to people. That's really essentially what it is. Okay, so we've come to the end and it's prediction time. You've sprinkled in a little bit of one of your predictions in here, but I would love to hear what you see changing for marketers in the next 1 to 2 years. And it could be on influencer marketing, it could be on PR, it could be marketing in general. But what kind of changes do you see happening in the next 1 to 2 years?
I guess the first thing that comes to mind, aside from my whole like action-driven marketing, which I can talk a little bit more about too, but the first thing that just came to mind is just this, I guess this isn't like revolutionary, but just with 2020 and COVID and, you know, the social justice movement that's kind of, we're in the middle of, I just think transparency with, you know, like you said, I mean, it's person to person, like at the end of the day, you're a brand, but like someone is typing up the caption. Like a computer is not running your social media, whether you want to pretend like it is or not. It's human to human interaction. So being transparent, you know, being vulnerable. I think vulnerability is something that like we don't talk enough about on social media from an influencer perspective, but also from brands. Like, you know, if they mess up, say you messed up and apologize. Like you're going to mess up. Like, you know, humans are running your business. So just vulnerability, openness, you know, and I feel like there's like, we can get, this is like another topic, but like, you know, there's all this political tension and like the woke thing that, you know, people make fun of. And it's just like, be open, be authentic, you know, be inclusive. Like it's not that hard to be inclusive. And just, you know, if you are more old school, like be open to being these things, because this is where it's headed. Like from an influencer perspective, 3 years ago, influencers would never post without makeup on. I mean, now it's like, if you post with makeup, you're getting criticized. Like,
yes,
I see that you're wearing lots of foundation in that picture. Like, why aren't you being natural? Like, people want to see authenticity. We're craving after years and years and years of aspirational content on social media. We want to see real life. Like, that is just the way it's kind of shaken out. And it's good. I mean, I think that's what's going to save us from social media and our teenagers and our daughters from all the craziness that comes with social media, is like brands need to be that you know, leader in authenticity and vulnerability.
They have to be the authentic voice.
Yeah. And then the other thing, not to get like back off my high horse about authenticity, but the other thing, you know, which I talked about, is this, you know, really tracking action. So awareness is important. Storytelling is important. Content is, you know, it's still important. Good content will lead to good outcomes. But what's beyond that? I think if any influencers are listening, that my biggest like suggestion is just thinking more in that like sales mindset. It's not about the hard sell. It's not about, you know, pushing products that you don't believe in. But if you do believe in a product and you're doing a brand deal with that company and you think it would benefit your audience, do a better job of selling it. Like think in that mindset of like, how can I get people to really try this out and have it benefit their life? Because that's what marketers on my side want to see more of. I think we've been a little too loosey-goosey with the awareness only. And I think now it's time where brands really want to kind of see that conversion.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think it's interesting that that prediction is on asking for more from your influencer as well, right? Because it is a business. I think we're living in this creator economy, like, bubble that's bursted, but in a positive way, like it's definitely expanded. So if we're really asking everyone, and by everyone, I mean brands, to really reevaluate how they look at influencer marketing, right? How they look at influencers, how they look at creators, it makes sense as marketers for us to ask more and say, like, if you do truly love this, tell me why.
Exactly.
Tell me why and convince me. Convince me that this is what it is that I need without being too pushy.
Right. Yeah, like, it is definitely balance. That's such a good point. Because it's true. It's like, you know, creators want to be taken more seriously. They are. A lot of times creators are a makeup artist, they're a photographer, they're a copywriter. They do all this stuff and they deserve to be treated as a creator because that's what they are, you know? But at the same time, the brands need to get, you know, if they're gonna up level their career and their role as influencers, brands want to see, you know, how that translates for them, because they're going to continue putting money into this and continue having this part of their marketing mix, but they want to see more results and more of the data. I think that's the biggest thing, is just getting the data and, you know, testing and learning and keep growing on that.
No, I definitely agree. In short, we all just need to work better together. That's really all it is. Live in this human-to-human marketing world that we're in and ensure that we're continuing to be authentic. And on that note, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on. I know we had technical difficulties that no one will ever hear of.
It just needs more time for us to catch up.
Exactly, exactly. Our take two on this was fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I had so much fun diving into what is PR with Katie, taking a look at the evolution of PR from someone who was in the trenches at Ogilvy. She helped paint the picture of what media relations used to look like to what it looks like now. Now, we dove into the effect of social media on PR to really help illustrate that PR isn't dead, my friends. It's just been reimagined a little bit. The ability for anyone to have media relations, not just a big-time PR agency, has helped create a huge jumpstart for anyone managing influencers and creators alike. But listen to Katie's advice. Get your house in order. Ensure you, as a brand, have your messaging in place and buttoned up. That PR foundation of key messaging is key to the success in sharing a consistent brand story across your entire marketing strategy. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I would not mind 5 of them. And leave us a review. Tell me what you like and what you want to hear more of. If you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.